The fourth case this morning is United States versus Hicks. Mr. Walrath.
Good morning, Your Honor. Jim Walrath appearing for Christopher Hicks, the appellant in this matter. This is the second time on this case. Now, up for the follow-up issue on after a evidentiary hearing on remand of whether there was a reasonable basis for Detective Wayne Armin of the Milwaukee Police Department to believe that he had, I put quotes around this, enough, because that's what he told another detective, Detective Brown, later, that he had enough reliable, timely information amounting to probable cause that a firearm was located specifically on December 24, 2006 at an upper duplex owned by Christopher Hicks or rented by Christopher Hicks' girlfriend, a location where Christopher Hicks was an occasional overnight guest. Detective Armin told Detective Donald Brown, who was going to go on December 24 in the morning to Samela Smith's, the girlfriend's, duplex to arrest Christopher Hicks. Armin told Detective Brown that if Samela Smith balked at giving consent to search for a firearm that the police were looking for in connection with a shooting incident months earlier in October, Armin told Brown that if Samela Smith balked at giving consent to search for the firearm, to tell her that refusing consent would be futile because they had, quote, enough information for a search warrant. The district court found that Armin's stated belief was not unreasonable, and in this appeal, we submit that it was. And we submit that it was unreasonable, an unreasonable belief on Detective Armin's part for two reasons. The precise facts available to Detective Armin did not make it probable that Christopher Hicks kept a firearm at Samela Smith's place on December 24, 2006. And secondly, the applicable law does not support a belief that information about Hicks' possession of a firearm earlier, months earlier in October 2006, would have continued. And would have continued, first of all, as a matter of time, into late December 2006, and secondly, would have, in fact, continued in such a way that the firearm would have been located at basically what is a temporary residence, or was. Now, I feel that the reason there's difficulty in this case, and the reason, frankly, that Christopher Hicks didn't prevail below is because there is a fundamental misunderstanding with regard to the facts as they were adduced at the hearing on remand. And that mistake shows up in the district court's ruling in short appendix page 19 in page 7 of its unpublished ruling, where the district court found that there was this informant who Armin claimed was close to Hicks, who directed police to Hicks' location and another location, another person who was suspected of having the same firearm, and that this informant had told the police that the gun they were looking for was at one of those locations. The district court was basically making a leap there from what the actual facts were and what the actual testimony was. The informant, who is information is critical to Armin's claim that he had a reasonable belief that the gun would be located at this location. The critical point is that the informant did not give a prediction as to where and when the gun would be located, or specifically at what time or whether it would be there on December 24, 2006, most specifically. And this information, these clear facts, show up at pages 70 and 71 of the transcript of the hearing, and those are the same page numbers in the full appendix, the separate appendix of the defendant appellant here. And I just want to quote that I put this question to Detective Armin and the third citizen witness or confidential informant didn't tell you that in December they saw Hicks with a 9mm semi-automatic with an extended clip, did they? His answer, no, sir, the citizen didn't tell me that they saw him with that gun in December. And then later on I ask a follow-up question, and he answers, I believe that the citizen, the third citizen said was the gun was either at Hicks' house or Stevens' house, I believe is what they said. And then I ask, and they didn't say when the last time they saw it there was, did they? Answer, no. Or how, and the question then, follow up, or how recent in relation to December 2006 they had seen it there, did they? And Detective Armin said, I don't believe so. So what we are left with is a situation where at some point around December 21, 2006, Armin more clearly says, or actually in a way more vaguely, sometime several days before December 24, when they went to arrest Mr. Hicks and this other individual, Mr. Stevens, several days before that, they spoke to this confidential informant. But at no time anywhere in any of these facts does Armin explain, number one, when it was that the confidential informant supposedly saw a firearm at the Samela Smith location. And secondly, just as importantly, Armin does not testify in any way as to why, based upon what the informant said, he made an inference, if he did, that somehow the gun would be at that location on December 24. Now, kind of what belies underlies everything here is that the decision to search, the timing of the search by the police here, was from all facts before the court, not based upon a belief as to when they would locate a firearm. Instead, what they were doing was they were executing arrest warrants. And as a side or ancillary to the execution of the arrest warrants for Hicks and this other individual, they decided they would look for the guns. What they were focused on was they wanted to execute the arrest warrants in a way, understandably, that it would be could be done safely and effectively. And so they made a decision to execute the arrest warrants on December 24, early morning of the day before Christmas, because, as they put it, it would give them the element of surprise. That piece of information, critical piece of information, I believe, is found in the transcript of the proceedings at page 37. So my conclusion is, and I urge the court to strongly consider this, is that the timing of the search was not tied to the information, any information as to where the present location of a firearm was. Instead, it was the timing of the police activity was tied to execution of arrest warrants to avoid being discovered ahead of time and to surprise the defendants and be able to find them in situations where they would not expect that the police would be looking for them. Armin had no information on where it was likely the gun would be located, according to the information at transcript pages 59 to 60. And Armin would not even state on the record at page 61, when he was asked, he would not state how it was that the confidential informant claimed to be in a position to have seen the guns, much less when that observation was made. So that is the record before the court, and I see the my rebuttal time is now beginning, and so I'd like to reserve time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Ms. O'Neill.
May it please the court. My name is Erica O'Neill, and I represent the United States here and in the case below. As Attorney Hicks noted, the issue is whether there was a reasonable factual basis for the police to believe they had probable cause to get the warrant. Both the district court and the magistrate judge in this case said yes, there was a reasonable factual basis for Detective Armand's belief.
Although there was no testimony about specifically when they saw or the witnesses saw the gun.
That is correct. As I was reviewing the transcript in preparation for this argument, I was looking at various sites in the record, including, we'll start with again, page 70, Attorney Walrath, apologize, I called him by the wrong name a minute ago, cited parts of page 70, but he left out other parts. Page 70, his question was, they didn't, referring to this unnamed confidential informant, tell you that they had seen him with a gun, period, did they? Detective Armand's answer, yes, they did tell me that they had seen him with a gun. What they said was that if he, referring to Mr. Hicks, did not have it, Mr. Stevens would have it. The gun was passing between the two of them. Then going back to page 30 in the record, this same person is referred to again. The person providing information took us to the house, Mr. Hicks's house. They knew these gentlemen well. They had been in the house. They had seen the weapons. Once they took us to the house, that's when Detective Armand talked about beginning surveillance and seeing Mr. Hicks going into the house.
So timing-wise, when is that? These two statements that were made, when is the timing as it relates to the December 24th search?
The timing indicates that the information was provided to Detective Armand just days prior to the execution of the warrants.
Right. They talked to him on the 21st. I understand that's when he talked to the CI. So what I'm trying to get at is what time frame did the CI see the gun?
You are correct, Your Honor. That is not very well developed in the record. There are references to these informants, this informant, as well as Frankie Randall, being intimate, knowing these people well. These are people that all live within.
Right, and I don't have any problem with that. They know them well, got the house right, all that kind of thing. I'm just saying there's no time frame as to when the gun was supposed to be in one residence or the other.
No, the information
is in the record.
That is correct. The information was that they had seen, Frankie Randall in particular, had seen this gun in the hands of Mr. Stevens, that information that Mr. Hicks and Mr. Stevens were always together, and then again that the gun was passing, present
right.
tense, between right. the two of them.
But no time frame as to when that occurred. No time frame as to when the gun was passing back and forth.
Right. That was a continuing time frame from the time of, at least before the shooting, through the time frame of when the arrest warrants were executed. This information was developing, and the information from the informant was present tense, was passing, not had passed. And therefore, the government submits that there is sufficient information that there was a reasonable factual basis for Detective Armand to believe that the firearm would be located at one of the two residences. And Detective Armand's actions were also reasonable based on what he did. He didn't just go to Mr. Hicks's residence. He didn't just go to Mr. Stevens' residences. He made the determination to go to both residences simultaneously because he believed the gun to be at one of the two residences, and the way to make sure that he didn't miss it and pick the wrong residence was to go to both together.
Right. But, of course, it would have been helpful if he had put some time dates on this, right, as to when people saw the gun passing, when they saw him with the gun. I mean, usually time has some relevance in terms of a probable cause, you know, determination. And
absolutely.
Is, yeah.
It, perhaps it's not as clear in the appeal briefs as it was in the transcript, but even when this evidentiary hearing occurred, which was December of 2008, 2 years after the search warrants occurred, Detective Armand was still very hesitant about talking about his informants, and in fact, he would not give up the name of the one informant because he was so concerned about the safety of this informant as well as about the safety of Frankie
Randall.
And
I'm not really doubting that he had some concerns. All I'm saying is that when he's interviewing them and he's getting information, having a date could be very helpful as to when all these things are that they observe.
Absolutely,
and there's
Judge.
No date about attached to anything.
Right. It is a present tense statement from
right.
the informant that was received by Detective Armand several days before the searches were executed and the arrest was executed. And I want to make clear for the record, this was not a case where there were arrest warrants. These were PC arrests done by Detective Armand. There was no search warrant. There was no arrest warrant.
Oh, no, I understand that.
Okay. And then finally, I would like to kind of leads me into my second point. In his reply brief, Attorney Walrath cites the case, the First Circuit case of Charest, which relates, so in reply to my argument about Singer. I had cited Singer for the proposition that it's reasonable to believe that guns are kept and they're kept for an extended period of time. In reply, Hicks cites Charest, which is a homicide case in which the First Circuit found it not reasonable to believe that the homicide suspect would keep the gun for an extended period after the shooting. I shepherdized that case in preparation for oral argument today, and while I note that Mr. Hicks's brief cites numerous state law cases in support of the proposition that guns are not kept, I do note that the 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, and 10th circuits have all talked about exactly the opposite of what the First Circuit said, that guns are items that are kept, which is consistent with what was this court held in Singer, but also, more specifically, that they are items that are kept in a person's house, which again corroborates the Detective Armand's actions in light of what the informant told him. The gun was passing back and forth between Hicks and Stevens. It's reasonable for Armand to believe that, therefore, the gun would be in one of their two houses.
It didn't Frankie Randall say something about this gun came out every time there was drama, that there was some sort of continuity about that?
That is correct, Judge. Frankie Randall indicated that nephew, who was Jermaine Stevens, specifically tried to sell him this 9mm, but then there was talk about, either from Frankie Randall or from Brandon Williams. Brandon Williams was the one who told Mr. Hicks to go get the quote-unquote chopper, that this was a firearm that came out. It was a neighborhood gun that was passed, at least between Stevens and nephew, and that it was a gun that...
There was a third one, too, who would take it from time to time, but that person was imprisoned. Prior to the search?
That is absolutely correct, Judge. That Detective Armand narrowed it down to the two because the third person was in prison, but that this was a neighborhood gun that came out any time there was drama, and there certainly was drama on October 10th or 11th of 2006 in light of the shooting that occurred after the homicide verdict that came back in this case that was the precipitating factor in this shooting.
This gun was a special 9mm in some way. It had some extra capacity.
That is correct. Based on the number of rounds that were fired and the number of casings that were recovered and the high speed in which the victims said they heard the gun being fired, Detective Armand came to the conclusion that this was likely a 9mm, based on the casings, with an extended clip, meaning that it was capable of holding additional rounds of ammunition such that the shooter would have been able to fire more rounds than a 9mm usually could have without reloading. And while I certainly admit that a Detective Armand certainly could have done a better job writing his reports in terms of timing, obviously he had very significant concerns about the safety of the informants in this case. But I believe that the record in this case is sufficient for this court to conclude and to agree with both the district court and the magistrate court that there was a reasonable factual basis for Detective Armand's belief that he had probable cause. And if there are no further questions, I will sit down.
Thank you, Ms. O'Neill. You have 1 minute, Mr. Wallace.
Thank you. Then very briefly, the quotation to the record at page 70 that counsel refers to, as Judge Williams pointed out, didn't have a time reference either. That is, in terms of when the confidential informant says that she saw the gun, or she or he, passing between Mr. Hicks and Mr. Stevens. There's no references to where this is in any of this time frame, whether it was even perhaps prior to October 2006. We just don't know. This ultimately, the question, it seems to me, is whether there are sufficient, it was the government's burden to establish this, whether there were sufficient facts put in the record to establish that a reasonable belief on Detective Armand's part as to whether it was likely that in present time, that is, as of December 24, that's the critical test, the firearm would be at Samela Smith's duplex. The black letter.
We know that they had the gun in October because Marcus Finch went with three others to arm himself.
There are witnesses who put Mr. Hicks with the gun in October.
Right.
No question about it. It seems to me the proposition at stake here, and then I'll finish, is straight out of Lefebvre's search and seizure. Probable cause of search exists only if it is established that certain identifiable objects are probably connected with certain criminal activity and are probably to be found at the present time in a certain identifiable place. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Walworth. Mr. Walworth, you were appointed to represent the defendant. The court expresses its thanks for taking the appointment and your fine representation of your client.